Let's start now with the payroll tax cut vote, which we're dealing with at the end of the year. Everybody seems to agree it's a good idea, but why do these things always seem to come down to the last minute and have to be played out in public? And do you think that's one of the reasons that Congress has such a low approval rating among the public right now?
Well, clearly, the reason we have such a low approval rating is because we're not getting, in large measure, the job done. This Congress, the first year of this Congress, has produced the fewest pieces of legislation. Now, some people may say that's a good thing, but clearly, this Congress is underperforming in its ability to reach compromise. Unfortunately, that is a sign of the times. People are unwilling to address issues, and they focus on the political rather than the factual. And that's a very, very disconcerting process, particularly for somebody who's relatively a short timer in politics. I'm looking for people to address first what the facts are, and then to apply their ideology to the facts.
So how difficult is it to be a congressman in such a highly politicized situation?
Well, it's very difficult, and it's extraordinarily frustrating. You know, the operations in Congress do not run smoothly. You're not in a position where, again, you're getting facts, and then you're able to analyze them. You know, we were faced with the omnibus bill last week. I guess it's actually the week before now. That unfortunately was presented to us literally with about 3 hours to vote on it. Now, this is something that the Republicans criticized Democrats for viciously, and now are doing exactly the same thing. And it's because people don't plan, aren't organized, and don't move things along in a businesslike fashion.
So what would you do if you were Speaker?
Well, if I were Speaker, I would line up first what the priorities were, and then I would insist upon people gathering factual data and doing analysis. And sometimes that analysis has to come from outside of Congress. You need to rely on people who have expertise that may not exist within the Congress or congressional staffs. Once that analytical work is done, then you can begin to apply your ideology to it, then have a debate about it, and move it along. But it's a question of prioritizing. And I think that that's extremely important, that people prioritize what their constituents need. In this environment, what people are most concerned about, and it's been true since I started in 2009, they are concerned about jobs and they're concerned about the economy. And that's what we should be focused on. Unfortunately, an awful lot of other issues get thrown up that I think are largely ideological and are not issues that go to resolving that fundamental issue with which most Americans are concerned.
Have you been happy with what the federal government's done to try to get the economy back going? There still are a lot of people out of work, and there's still a lot of people who are just have given up at this point. And what the government's done doesn't seem to have accomplished things up to now.
Well, you get different opinions, and I want to take it out of the political and talk about what economists say about it. Most economists believe that the projects, the work that the government did sort of held the line. Didn't really make it better, but it held the line from getting worse. It's always difficult to prove a negative. I think that the focus, however, when we passed the stimulus was not correct. We should have really directed that in large measure to infrastructure projects that could have created both short-term and long-term job creation. Sort of an interesting thing that's going on now. You know, we're hearing unemployment claims are going down. We're hearing the unemployment rate is going down. Economists are starting to talk about the recovery really taking hold. But there are currently 3.2 million unfilled jobs in the United States. If you fill those jobs, that's 2% decline in the unemployment rate. So if it's at 8.6 today, it'd be down to 6.6. When I say unfilled jobs, I mean there is a job posting by an employer saying I need this position filled. In our district alone, there are 3,400 unfilled jobs. I've been working with the Workforce Investment Board people throughout the district trying to develop a plan to fill those 3,400 jobs. That would have a huge impact on the economy. If you fill the 3.2 million unfilled jobs, you'd create wages and salaries in the system that would amount to about $96 billion. That's a tremendous amount of demand. And demand is really what we need in the economy, since about 70% of our economy is consumer-driven.
Now, is that because there's not enough of a trained workforce that these jobs go unfilled?
That's part of it. There are situations in which training would be necessary. There are also situations in which, because of the wage being paid by the job and the availability of unemployment, it disincentivizes people to take the job. And there's a number of ways that can be dealt with. There's a program in the state of Georgia that was actually incorporated into the president's jobs bill called the Bridge to Work program. That, I think, could be a very effective tool in putting people back to work. Sometimes in a rural community, it's lack of access to transportation. Sometimes for single parents, it's a lack of access to daycare. These are some things that we can work on that would get people back to work. I think if you put them back to work, number one, it lifts the overall psychology of people. It puts money in their pockets, and they spend that money. So it's good for the economy across the board.
Now, one thing that would help your district, it's huge, the North Country, is the wireless access throughout the area. How is that progressing?
Well, we've had some success in that this year in terms of getting dollars for broadband. As you may know, DANC is doing an expansion of the broadband system. Right now, it's primarily focused on health facilities. But once that spine is in place, hopefully we can figure out ways to expand that into or give access to other aspects of the community. There was funds in the Regional Economic Development Council budget for Hamilton County to do broadband work. I forget the exact dollar amount now, but there was money in there to expand broadband. Very important for Hamilton County because they really need that kind of infrastructure in order to bring people into the county who may be able to work remotely.
Looking at a couple of other issues quickly, you supported the Affordable Health Care for America Act. Are you standing by that? Do you think that there's a chance it could be repealed?
Well, I would never say never. I think that I am standing by it. I still believe that in the absence of any other plan, and I still have not heard a plan from my friends on the other side of the aisle that would replace this in a way that would do two things. One, reduce cost, and the other is improve healthcare outcomes. This is very important. We absolutely have to get our arms around healthcare costs, and there's a number of provisions in the healthcare bill that I think are extremely helpful to that. One of which is the accountable care organizations. Another is the focus on primary care, and I also believe that the state exchanges will go a long way to helping to reduce healthcare because it will allow people to purchase different levels of coverage. And I'll give you an example. An employer in the district came up with a program offered by an insurance company that basically raised the deductible, but because of raising the deductible, it allowed the employer to cut cost and to put dollars into an HSA to help fund the deductible, but it also reduced the employee's cost sufficiently that there were dollars available for the employee to put money into the HSA. In other words, completely overtaking the deductible and still have a reduced premium. So, in other words, both the employer and the employee were saving money with this plan.
Turning to foreign affairs and the withdrawal of troops from Iraq and potentially Afghanistan next year, a million soldiers basically, especially with Fort Drum in your district. Is there going to be an impact in that? Are you glad that they're coming home? And is there a more seamless way that these soldiers can move from the Department of Defense to the Department of Veterans Affairs?
Well, clearly that is an ongoing struggle in terms of moving our veterans from the DOD into the Veterans Administration. That's something we work on literally every day in the office. We get issues like this. We're constantly in touch with the VA, trying to help people make that transition as seamless as possible. We get tremendous number of issues within the last couple of months. We were able to assist a widow in securing over $400,000 in back benefits from the VA, and on a going forward basis to receive about $1,500 a month. So we want to make that seamless. We want to make sure that everybody gets the benefits that they've earned in this through their service. In terms of Iraq and Afghanistan, I think keeping the plan the president put in place, that timetable, I think is very important. I believe that we've done, in terms of lives, injured soldiers, and money, everything we can for the Iraq and the Afghani people. We want to make sure that we're transitioning the control of their country, their security to them, and I think we're moving in the right direction. Doesn't mean we're not going to see bumps along the way. Doesn't mean that there aren't going to be problems, but I think Americans have met their commitment, have done it honorably, and the folks who served in Afghanistan and Iraq have done so with great honor and great sacrifice, and we all should be thankful for that.
And if we could quickly move on to the political, of course, next year is an election year. Redistricting in New York State's happening. Do you have any sense of how the 23rd is going to shake out in all this?
The only thing I know is that we're going to get bigger.
Geographically bigger.
Geographically, we have to get bigger.
So you don't know, would it be like in the Capital District or would it be in Central New York, do you think?
We really don't know. That's all up for grabs, and it's out of my control. It's being done by, as you know, the state legislature, and presumably the governor will have a hand in that. So we're just waiting for word as to what direction they want us to go in.
You've never won a race of the two races in the 23rd with more than 50% of the vote. Realistically, if Doug Hoffman hadn't split the Republican vote, who knows what would have happened. Do you find that affects your governing? And do you think if he hadn't been around, you ever would have won?
Well, I can only tell you that it does not affect my governing. I act in accordance with what I believe to be the best interest of my constituents. And in accordance with my conscience. And so, however elections play out, that's how I'm going to respond to the process of governing.
How much mileage do you put on? I guess you don't drive, you probably fly a lot, but how many miles do you put in just going back and forth in that district?
Well, first of all, I don't fly. I drive. And probably we're in the range of, I'm going to guess, 15 to 20,000 miles a year.
Wow.
It's a lot of driving. And that's, remember, I'm only home in the district really on weekends and 1 week a month. So we spend a lot of windshield time in that process.
Is that good or is that challenging?
Well, it's clearly challenging, you know, because you do spend a lot of time going from place to place. And that somewhat limits the number of places you can get to, obviously, in a day. It would be much better if we had, in a sense, greater population centers, because then you could reach more people. We spend a lot of time doing town halls in person. We also do a number of telephone town halls because we find that to be very, very effective in terms of reaching out to people. We also have my staff going out into communities every month, trying to be available to our constituents so that their travel time is reduced.
And I read you're running for re-election, right?
Yes.
Okay, so it's going to be another fun year with re-election ads and all that stuff and everything like that.
Well, we're certainly looking forward to it. It's always an interesting process, and I always learn something as I go through it.
What have you learned this last year that you never thought, you know, that you never knew before you were in Congress?
Well, I would say to you that what I've learned is that you have this wide array of viewpoints in Congress. Some of it is regional in nature. Some of it's ideological in nature. And trying to meld it together in a coherent policy takes a lot of effort, a lot of time, and a lot of goodwill. And we need to focus in that way. And I think Congress has drifted away from that, and that's very unfortunate. But, you know, I reach out to Richard Hanna. We talk, if not every day, certainly every other day. I have a lot of interaction with Chris Gibson, with Peter Welch in Vermont, and Paul Tonko. We all communicate because we have regional interests and have constituents who have many of the same concerns. So we really try to focus our energies on interacting on that level. And I think that's a beginning of bringing less partisanship to Congress and more compromise.